this is an interview with Annalise Fedorik for the Youngstown State University Project Germany in the 1930s and 40s by Stephen R. Ard at the Saxon Club in Youngstown, 710 South Meridian Road, on the 12th day of July, 1981, at approximately 6:25 p.m. Annalise, would you like to tell me when and where you were born?
I'm born March 17, 1921, in Dessau, Germany. That's between Berlin and Leipzig.
Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up there?
Yeah, the biggest airplane factory from East Germany is located right in my hometown. Junkers Airplane Factory, J-U-N-K-E-R-S.
What did your father do?
My father had a pharmacy, and we was three children in home. I was the only one. My dad insisted I have to go and learn the trade because I always helped him measuring and cleaning up the medicine cabinets and helped him reading some fancy doctor's writings on the prescription, what he lots of times couldn't make out. So he insisted I have to go and learn to help him assist the read. Some doctors really have some fancy writing.
Can you tell me about your school days there?
Yes, I went in a grade school. And then... So then... 1933, everything in our school days changed when a different government took over.
How do you mean changed?
Well, instead good morning, you have the greetings on the street and in the store and the businesses, you have to use the word Heil Hitler.
If you didn't,
what
happened?
You either find stones in your windows or... You'd find that you was on the list somewhere, but they maybe called on you someday.
Did that happen to people you knew?
Yeah, it happened to lots of people in my hometown. So all we did, just obeyed, and nobody bothered you after you did, after they told you not to say good morning, say Heil Hitler in school, and everywhere on the street also, then nobody bothered you at all.
When you were in school, when you were called on by the teacher to recite something, was there a little procedure?
No, nothing.
What kind of school did you go to?
I went right in Dessau, called the Martin Luther School, but it was not, it had nothing to do with religion. That was just the name of the school, was right there.
Was
close
it?
To my home, maybe walking distance.
Was it a public school?
Yes.
Can you tell me some of the things you learned in that school? After the change, when the Nazi Party took over?
I don't think in school itself that we learned anything about politics or anything. Our grades were still all the same. We still learned about history, arithmetic, writing, and all kind of whatever subject of language you took. I don't think it changed anything there. It was all the same. The only thing is that they made the boys or the girls join like a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout.
Mm-hmm. Had you joined?
No.
How come?
Because I had to help my father.
Oh.
So that was there was a good excuse there, so I didn't have to go. I stayed home.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to go?
Well, if not want to, but if it was a must, you had no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout, I don't think they force you.
No.
But over there, that time, that youth age for the camps and everything was a must. You really had to go. My father was wounded from the 1418 war. He had a shot in France right in his back and it came out to his stomach, and so he certain work he couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So he was ailing at that time. That's why he passed away very young. So that's why I was the oldest one in homes. I had assist my dad.
Okay, after the 8 years of grade school, then?
Then I went to college.
Okay, what year is this about?
I went to college from 1935 to 1937. Okay. In 1938, I married. And my husband was already in the Reserve Navy. And when the war came at 1939, he was the first one in August when they grabbed. My son is born in 1939. I did not know when he was home the last time on leave, that he shook hands with my dad and told him whenever he don't come back from the war, he don't want the first grandchild to have a stepfather. So my parents kept my son and raised him, and that's why my son is still over there. Neither one knew that Germany ever going to be divided, and we have problems to get in back once you're out there. And that's why my son is still over there. I went over there 3 times and still couldn't see him. He's an interpreter for the Russian government. I have no mail for 3 years, nothing.
Great. Can you tell me a little bit about when you were in college then? About 37 to 39?
In college, I did like in school. You study two subjects, and I stayed on campus because I was pretty far away from my hometown to travel. So I just vacation time went home. And
did you talk about politics then?
Not in college at all.
How come?
No. In college was never even anything mentioned about politics. All we talked about it and knew that a war is coming on pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
But about Hitler or politics, we didn't talk anything. Yeah. No professor or anybody, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No. My husband was graduated, he was an eye doctor from college. The war came, and I had children, so finished was the college. Couldn't go and finished it up.
Mm-hmm.
Then my husband got drafted and served in 1944. He didn't come back home. I had the news that he got killed in France in an American torpedo mine. He was on a submarine boat.
Mm-hmm.
So I hang out the diapers. He got killed on August the 9th, 1944. In November, I finally heard the news. We had no washers and dryers. I hang out the diapers. And one neighbor lady said, "I'm sorry to hear about your husband being killed." I said, "Yeah, why don't they quit? We're going to lose anyhow. All our cities, everything get bombed."
Was your city bombed pretty bad?
Very much, because they had the airplane factory. There was 90% destroyed, everything. So here's one judge right in Youngstown. He showed me pictures. He went right in my hometown and showed me pictures. Judge Morley.
Mm-hmm.
From my hometown, that he put bombs there. It was a target because the airplane factory was there.
Mm-hmm. He was the pilot? Dropping the bombs?
He was a lieutenant, yeah.
Okay,
yes.
He has pictures that he took.
Yes, we had a dinner here once, and he asked me, "How come I have an accent where I'm from Germany?" And I said, "Yeah," and he wanted to know the town. I said, "From Dessau. You must live right behind here somewhere." 10 minutes later, he come back and showed me all the photos. So he felt really bad about it. He said, but it was his duty, and that just happened like this. So I hang the diapers out and I say to the neighbor lady, "Why don't they quit? We're going to lose anyhow." Americans coming closer and Germany should give it up because everything is getting ruined. All the men get killed. I didn't know she had an SS boyfriend. But 4 days later they came and took me with my two little girls and put me in concentration camp.
And said, where at?
In Dachau, right by Munich. And they said I was against my own country. I was talking against my own country, I shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So then after they find out when they entered me, they didn't ask all the routines. They thought I was just a plain soldier's widow and didn't know my background really good. They find out that I studied medicine, so then they got me in a quarter like where they had more people for doing medication work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I really had to do some dirty work. It was not very pleasant.
What do you mean?
I had to take all the gold fillings out from the Jewish people out of their teeth, out of their britches and braces before they got cremated. One of them, a big lieutenant or whatever he was from the SS, collected all that gold and melted maybe up. I don't know what he did with it.
Mm-hmm.
If he wasn't going to do this, stood right behind you with a gun there. So my youngest daughter was born in 1942. When that happened with my husband in 1944, she was anyhow just a 7-month baby. We had no much to eat during the war. She was 3 years old before she made her first step. So in that concentration camp, I only see her maybe once a week on a tiny little window. She getting skinnier and smaller. I thought, I'm going to lose her. And she's a fine girl now. She's heavy and has 4 children, have a big farm here in Ohio.
Can you describe some of the camp to me? What was Dachau like?
They were all small little barracks, like a primitive set up barracks. And then one great big building where the gas chambers were and the room was. It had all real small, every 6-7 inches apart, small pipes on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think you would be going into those gas chambers?
No, but I seen them. I was right in it. They showed us, they frightened us. They showed us there.
Mm-hmm. And they told you what they were doing?
They told us what they're doing. All they had to do, push a button, and they put all these people in there, packed like the sardines, and then they turned ice cold water on them, coming out these pipes with real fine needle holes, puncture holes. And then but a half hour later they put him in another room where they had pipes again on the ceilings and on the walls everywhere where the gas come out. And then they had like a disposal button with what they pushed, this underground, where they just opened up like sliding concrete pieces where all these bodies just fell in.
Mm-hmm. How did the bodies come to you, where you were working removing the gold fillings?
They were not bodies, they were still alive when I had to do that.
Oh, you took that out before
mm-hmm.
they were dead?
Before they gassed them, yes.
Mm-hmm. How hard was that?
Not so easy.
They weren't cooperating, were
no,
they?
No. Lots of one old Jewish lady offered me anything and offered me all kind of addresses from her family. Not to take it out. You could not even whisper. They couldn't do anything. Them officers went right back and forth, up and down with their guns and with a club in their boot. One lady, she was not going to do anything. She was an eye doctor. And the one officer kicked her so bad right in her ribs and in her kidneys and spit on her. He made us to see it too. He pulled our hair and everything. So it frightened you when you see that. So yeah, you just have to do what they ask.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would never see your children or anything again.
Now, did they treat you, because you were German, different from the other people?
After they find out more that I really was not spying against my country, that I was just really make that statement because I was very sad about that. I lost my husband and my home got bombed out 3 times, and so did my parents. Half of the drugstore, half of the house was gone. So that after they all maybe checked all into that, they knew that I was not a spy against Germany, that I just made that statement because I was upset. So then they didn't treat me too bad. Then in May 45, when the war was over, the American GIs came marching in. They said, who has a home or a parent to go to can leave the camp immediately. If not, you would have to wait for some kind of special discharge papers and, I guess, a place where you have a steady place to show that where you have to go.
In the camp itself, how well were you fed? You said your daughter was there.
Not too good. I know the children just had postum coffee and powdered milk. That was just regular coffee, like from Grits or something. And we mostly all had soup made from either from lots of onions or from lots of potatoes. Not too many good ingredients in it, because it was too many, too many to be, be fed.
Can you tell me about, can you remember how the camp smelled?
I say they kept them pretty sanitary, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of them lucky that I didn't have to get a number on me put on, because they knew after they checked all my records and everything, my parents, neither one was in a party to belong to the communists or anything. So they kind of melted us down. But some of them, we saw them, well, some of them got treated very rude. I saw one lady sitting next to us. She was peeling potatoes and she said, I think my baby's not going to make it by tomorrow. It's going to be gone. It's going to be dead. And the officer went by and he heard it. And he claimed that she said something about him. He pulled her out from the row from the potatoes and beat her up so bad. Injured her so bad that the next day the baby was not dead. She was. We saw that happen. Yeah.
Was that a German lady or a Jewish lady?
German lady.
German lady. Were there any Jewish people in with you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. There were anti-Nazi people and Jewish people there. Right? They never did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't separate. They just kept everybody together.
They all mixed all together. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. When they were going to take somebody to the gas chamber,
they wouldn't even tell you. They just called them all by numbers, and they got them on very big old army vehicles, like they used the army vehicles and really jammed them up. They all like you couldn't even turn left or right, and here we already saw again they made us see that too. Very cool. There goes another load again. You hear them screaming from they were fighting and they didn't want to go on there. Lots of them want to commit suicide before they ever, but they had no medication, no chance to do it. They had to follow them wherever they took them. Mm-hmm. The whole place was guarded very highly. Very highly, and all them big police dogs all over. They even chased dogs after people and attacked them with dogs. Mm-hmm. Tear gas, we saw all this.
What else did you see?
Really, actually, how they killed them, or I did not see. They just showed us that's what they do with them. And we saw when they transport them to the shambles, but how they come out or what they do after, how they destroy them or what they look, the bodies look like. We didn't see that.
Now, when you said they showed you, did they show the German people this, or
they
did they?
All of us.
All
of us were
Germans,
on
Jews,
duty.
And everybody
all
who.
All of who was on duty there was certain ones have kitchen duty. Certain ones have like then when they find out I studied medicine, they had me in like a Red Cross barrack or something, and they took us all there only once and showed us. So that we would remember what's going to be done there.
But you were not worried that they were going to take you and actually put
well,
you in?
Well, I was worried too, because you never knew what they what they were doing. I was worried too. It could have been my turn also. I did not know yet that they had checked my record already, that I'm more on the easy side than any other one. I will live in fear steady every minute, every hour. Could have been my turn just as much.
Did you have any other jobs while you were at the camp?
No.
No?
No.
They just had you?
First I had kitchen duty. Told one officer one day, come and he said, how come you didn't tell us you studied medicine? And I said, I was not asked when I got entered. First he thought I was smart. He kind of looked at me very mean. And I said, absolutely, so I was not asked. What I learned, and I was not finished with my studying medicine, so I didn't call it a profession. He said, but you did study for 2 years, so we, and your father has a drugstore, they checked everything. You know medicine, don't you? I studied dentist, that's what I did. So that's why they got me there to take all the, with a pair of old rusty pliers. No injections or anything, nothing.
Okay. What did you do, pull the whole tooth? Okay, you didn't take the filling out, you just took
the
whole tooth.
The whole tooth, yeah.
Did somebody have to hold them down?
One of them officers did it. I guess the one who collected it all or something. He had some kind of old clay pot, a container like where you put plants in. Full. With all the golden clamps and everything. Jewish people and lots of them anti-Nazi people years ago, they all mostly had all gold fillings. It's out of style now here a lot, but your people still have lots of gold places and fillings in their teeth. It's a very soft gold. And if you're not careful, it breaks just like glass. And they think you're some kind of professional to do this. Right with a gun right behind you, and it's loaded too. Whatever they have in their boots really hurts when they ever hit somebody that had like steel bullets on it on the bottom and on the leather spring like. When we saw that, how he beat that one lady, she was black and blue all over. This really hurts.
Now, when the Americans came in, liberated the camp. Can you describe that in a little bit more detail?
What they really did, give orders that we all can go home, and they furnished the trains and kind of guarded us all the way home to Germany. And in my hometown, the American GIs were in for about 6 weeks, and then they left it in the Russians' camp because
now,
they
took
so much on the Elk River. I was there when it happened. Yeah.
Okay, you were there when the Russians came in and took over the town.
Yes.
What happened to you then?
My sister and I had to hide in the cellar with our children. We was afraid. But one asked us something about our men. We couldn't understand them Russian what they were talking about. So somebody told us to show with our hands like laying on the side like and show down the ground that they are dead. So then they didn't bother us, so just touched the children a little bit, and then they went back out again. But all the stores were closed for 4 days. We couldn't get any milk or anything for our babies, nothing. And then naturally everything had to be dark by 10 o'clock, just like it was during the Hitler time when we had the war. Air raid, everything had to be black, blinded, the windows and all. The Russians did the same thing. Otherwise, they left us alone if you followed your rules, that you'd be in the house by 10 o'clock. Then I met my second husband, and he was sorry that I had two little girls because my parents had my son. He kept my son. He begged me to go with him over the border and escape and go to West Germany. And that's what we did. It was before the Berlin Wall came up.
Was it hard getting out?
Yes.
Or?
It was very hard to get out. Machine guns and high towers with watchtowers and everything in between. We were 2 nights and 3 days on our feet with no food. We lost our shoes. We went through mud. My daughter, I couldn't catch her. He pulled her across the little creek and she fell in the water. She screamed so loud. We thought they're going to hear us. We was in that no man's land where we didn't know how far we was on the American side. And if somebody told us on the border side, if they catch us either way, the Americans catch us, they chase us back, and if the Russians catch us, they keep us for sure and never even let us get out. So we didn't know where we was. So we see some old farmer lady with a gentleman with a bicycle, and they had a little box on the back of their bike with a little pick. They were going to go to the black market on the border. One of us snuck up and asked them, and they said that we are already in both Germany, West Germany, we are, because the border is already on the American zone, but they're still being highly guarded. So then they told us to go on the edge of the woods for 3 miles, and then there would be a bus, takes working people to a big train station early in the morning. And that bus driver, if we tip him very high, he knew that we all come from the border line, he would take us to the train station and protect us. So that's what we did. When we came on the train station, we looked so muddy and so dirty, they wouldn't even sell us a ticket. But they did anyways. So there's a ticket, and we went to Munich. And from Munich, we went to Rosenheim, where my husband was stationed once, and he knew that farm people over there. He was an engineer. So they made the bridges across Italy and things. He was stationed there. So then that's where we stayed. Got married, just met each other, just left my parents behind, and my son. He promised me it's going to be better there in West Germany. Come stay by the Russians. And someday I get my son. And I tried 1947. I went over with a passport to get my son. After I was married, I married 1947 again. My parents.
That was your third husband then?
Yeah, the one who just died young. Yeah, it was the third one.
Okay. He was an American?
The third husband, yes.
Yes. Was he a soldier stationed over there?
You're talking about the one who took me over the border.
No, I'm talking about in 47.
That is a German husband. He was stationed over there. He was a German husband.
Oh, okay.
The third one, I came with him over here, and he died over here, the second
husband. Oh, okay. I see, okay.
So, when I went over there and wanted to get my son, my parents fight. My dad say, I promised to George, who got killed in the war, that was my first husband, the boy's not going to have a stepfather, and I'm going to keep him, raise him. You cannot have him. So I went to the minister, and he said, go to the school, take him out of school. Put him on the train. I had a special passport for my son to take him back. I took him out to school, and when I came on the train station, I had a change different train to go over the border from east to west Germany, and I was patrolled by the Russians. So I had to wait for this train, and while we were sitting there on the train station to wait, only once a day a train crosses that border in Leipzig. The German police came after me and said, give him my son back, my parents, and F them, or they're going to take me to Siberia. Well, I had no choice. I've given my son back. I know my parents want him so bad. I couldn't find it. So I gave him back. Then when my dad passed away in 1957, when I was already here in the States, I came in 1951. He cried in the hospital and called for me, why don't she come now? She can have him now. I could never make it back in there. 1951, I came with my husband and my two daughters over here to the United States. On a, they call Marshall Plan. I had no relatives or anybody here. The first time the church in war in Ohio sponsored for us, we came over here and sponsored for the church organization. But we was no Baptist or anything. We just lined up for the whole family. So then I lived in Warren, Ohio. Neither one of us could speak English. We all learned. My two daughters kept their father, who was killed during the war's name. And four of them went to school, and I went house and doing odds and ends jobs to learn how to speak English. And then I made a mistake. Start working in St. Joseph Hospital in Warren. I thought I could maybe work myself up for my medicine. You know, then I would later on go back to college. And here was lots of difficulty, and they put me in the emergency room. And I had difficulties there working there because some of the girls made fun of me because I couldn't speak English. And so I was very upset, and the father from the hospital said, go home, my child. You're too young here in this country. Do something else first, and then come back and study your medicine, finish. This is kind of hard when you can't speak the language. Just go right away and go ahead. So I just gave it up all completely. I just did house cleaning and odds and ends. And I worked after a while in Trumbull Memorial Hospital in Warren as a cook. My two daughters got married and had family. And my husband passed away. And I was a widow. And I remarried again. And now my husband passed away. No lucky, I guess.
Let me ask you, let's go back to Germany in the, let's say, late 1930s and 40s. Did you ever see Adolf Hitler anywhere or any of the other? Where?
Yeah, I see him in my hometown. There was a big, like, I would say, like, every town has a mayor and every state has a governor or something. There was a big governor passed away, but he was a big Nazi man, and it was a big state funeral. And Hitler and Goebbels and all of them came with their big automobiles. So naturally, we all stood in line to wait for the big parade, like you go here everywhere where a big parade is. And I saw him again when he went in a big train with Mussolini and somebody else designed some kind of papers in from Russia. I guess was it Roosevelt?
No.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah. Great big train. And we had to stay on the train, barricaded up everything, and the train went real slow, and they all waved out of the windows. And I saw Hermann Göring, and he was in that airplane factory where my hometown is. He came there and treated it, and often I guess cut some ribbons for one of them great big new bumpers we had, called it Stuka 87. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It had the biggest bomb score. Not close enough to shake hands with him, but fairly close that I could see what he looked like. He liked children. People treated him. People went crazy for him to meet him and everything. And I say some of his doings, what he did for the people, they were not all this bad, because he made sure that people all had food and discipline. Nobody had the guns shooting everybody like mad or killing. Everything was pretty good in order.
Would you say most people were impressed by Hitler?
During the time when he was, I guess, yes. Yeah. Till it came to the end of the war, when people got disgusted at the... I guess because he was not his own boss no more. He had too many dictators. Everybody wanted to go his own way. And that's why people then kind of turned away from him. But when he was the commander, when he first took over, people had no, I don't think, any complaints. Nobody was starving or anything.
Did you ever read his book, or any part of his book, Mein Kampf?
I had it, and I destroyed it when I find out my husband got killed. And they all gave it to you when you got married. I married during the Hitler time, so you have to get it. You get it right from the courthouse. You cannot be able to refuse it.
What did you think of it?
I still have a marriage certificate book. Well, the men in the Social Security office was very impressed about it. With all the birth certificates in there for my children, and I have the original mail stamped right in there from Hitler with the emblem on it. He took copies of it. He wanted it for his own self. He asked if I would give him that book. No, my daughter's one that. I don't know how I had that in process to bring it over here, that I hung on to that so bad.
What was the significance of that?
Like if you get a birth certificate here in the courthouse with a stamp, that's what this is. It's stamped from over there from the courthouse, but it had the Hitler seal on it.
Okay, what he was concerned with was the Hitler seal. The fact that it was on the document, is that it?
Yeah.
Going back, what was your impression of Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, when the parts that you read? What did you think of it?
A little bit too much fanatic, I thought, myself, he was. A little bit too much that he wanted, too selfish. Everything his own way and everything great the way he wanted. A little bit too selfish, it was.
Did you think what he was talking about was possible?
It might would have if he didn't have too many dictators around him, but they didn't listen and betrayed him to me. He might would have made some of it possible.
Did you ever hear any stories about him?
Yeah.
Like what?
About Eva Braun.
Okay, what'd you hear?
I heard that over here, but over there I never saw or believed anything, because we never saw Hitler over there with a lady in woman company.
Oh, really?
No, just with his big German shepherd dog, and mostly with the male person. In that book, my camp was even itemized in there very much, and very outspoken said, that Hitler was wounded in the 1914-18 war, and that he had a tube for urinate and everything, so he could not even have sex acts with no ladies. So that what we know, that he never even was involved with the ladies, companion, maybe for a partner to talk or something, but not, how they say that he was a 6 feet. Mm-hmm. We never believed it. After, when he was over there, and especially when, like I was a medical student, we talked even in college about it. So we knew that it's possible that he was wounded right there, so that he maybe just had a lady for cooking or something, but nothing else. He mm-hmm. never was married to Eva Kahn. We know that, never.
Mm-hmm. What other kind of stories did you hear about Hitler? Did you hear any at the time? You know, were there stories going around, maybe some of the things he did?
We never even know that he in any of these camps were entered himself in there. All these concentration camps, never that he entered them himself. They were all different organizations, different leaders, like a different boss, not himself was in there.
Did you know any of the other personalities within the, did you ever hear of a man by the name of Alfred Rosenberg?
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
All I heard of Himmler, Rommel, Goebbels, and Goering. Never heard of any other ones. And Rommel was, he was not so obeying his orders too much. He was on his own. He told my cousin was in his lead in Africa, mm-hmm. hang on you boys to all your food, yeah, we have to have some to go back home, we have to fight and get rid of Hitler's ambition, because we gonna lose anyhow. He was like an anti-Nazi, more neutral, mm-hmm. he don't want to be a fighter.
This is the end of the tape.